listening to ThePorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast podcast, brought to you by First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located in the heart of Denver's Rhino Art District at 1309 26th Street, featuring a pour-your-own draft system with over 40 incredible beers to sample from. And OnTap Credit Union, crafting individual financial solutions for people who brew great beer, the breweries that produce great beer, and the communities where they all reside and do business. The Porchcast is also supported by Latitude Financial Group, which provides financial planning and investment strategies so you can start saving money and begin lowering taxes. And finally, Made by Chalk, who can help with all of your brewery branding, logo design, and website design needs. And now, the Porchcast.
All right, and welcome to episode 38 of the Porchcast. That fancy new intro you just heard, hopefully will appraise you of all of our fantastic sponsors, but we are pumped to have you on the show with us once again, joined by Hunter Grandin.
What's up, Hunter? Howdy.
This podcast is brought to you by...
Bud Bronson?
No, not exactly.
Damn.
Kind of, yeah. What you're listening to in our intro music is Bud Bronson and the Good Timers, local Denver band.
First Draft, Taproom and Kitchen.
That's right. Also on the show today, really excited to welcome Shannon Berner and Bess Doherty. Guys, how's it going?
Great. I'm alive. That's cool.
Yeah, we'll get to that in just a moment. And, you know, we've had both of you all on the show at some point in the show's history. I know, Shannon, you were earlier on before we brought in Mr. Grandin. And Bess, you actually were part of the inaugural show that had all three of us, right?
I was not there.
Oh, you weren't there. Okay. Well, kind of the next, I guess, Porchcast 2.5, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. We're in a very dark little barrel room. And
we're all from different
areas. That was a good time.
But now we're...
I miss those barrels.
I know. We're bringing everyone together for the Super Friends team.
Dream team reunited.
And also on the ones and twos, we've got Sam Sly of Beer and Loathing. How's it going, Sam?
Good.
Awesome.
All right. Room levels.
Well, it's room levels. That should be your intro in any kind of social context.
Yep.
Hey, guys, it's Sam.
How are the room levels? Room levels are good. Yeah, room levels are good. All right.
Well, we're really excited to be broadcasting. It's been about a month, which is kind of crazy. Last time we spoke was during Cider Week.
Time flies, yeah.
Time flies when you're not recording podcasts.
That's happened since then, too.
Time flies when your industry is being taken over by
the getting hammered every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well,
it doesn't feel like that podcast was like a week ago.
Yeah. We've got lots to get to since we haven't spoken since that time. Lots of binging, yes. But even more so, we're going to talk a little bit about the recent news of the Brewers Association's new independent brewery seal. That's been kind of the talk of the town today. And also, New Belgium just introduced a Wood Cellar Reserve series. We'll get to that in a little bit. We also will touch on Rate Beer and Dogfish Head, and kind of about the Anheuser-Busch acquisition of Rate Beer and Sam Caligioni's response to that. And we'll get to some news of the weird here in a little as well. And I know, Hunter, you recently spotted an ad from Anheuser-Busch, the Brewed Across America campaign. I want to get to that
local.
In a little bit, too. But
support your local breweries.
Yeah.
Support all those small, super
local
independent
backyard
local
breweries. Yeah.
Backyard breweries.
Yeah.
But before we do, we have some tremendous guests. We might not even get to those topics, because when you get these two ladies in a room together, only debauchery and hilarity ensues. Shannon Berner, are you the marketing manager? What is your position exactly here at Great Divide?
Yep. That's the one.
That's the one.
Nailed it.
And Bess Doherty, of the upcoming Grateful Gnome, hopefully upcoming
someday.
Soon. Yes, eventually
yeah.
Upcoming.
It'll happen someday.
The Grateful Gnome, you know, we spoke with Bess when she was with Wynkoop. Both of you two both worked at Wynkoop together.
Yeah,
and so,
we did.
And only spoke in old-timey voices. Creepy old grandma voices.
It's gonna get weirder.
Well, so we're gonna touch on you two together collectively. But before we do, Shannon, I do want to get to a few different things as far as Great Divide's concerned. We're actually broadcasting from Great Divide's Barrel Bar in the Rhino Art District here on Brighton Boulevard. And, you know, you guys have really had a huge transformation over the past 2 years, adding this facility, but also, you know, this summer we've seen a lot of big changes as well. Denver Pale Ale has been introducing this local artist series over the past 2 years. The last year was the first year, this is the second. And you all just released the new design just a few weeks ago, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit more about the artist and kind of the design and the concept behind it, and what, you know, people, what consumers of DPA can expect, you know, with this new design.
Yeah, so Denver Pale Ale, or DPA, as most people were more familiar with it, was an English-style pale ale and only in bottles, and it was one of our oldest beers, our oldest recipes.
Sure.
But Denver is not the same place that it was 21 years ago, so it was kind of a daunting task when it came to putting it in cans and deciding what that can would look like, because everyone has very different interpretations and very strong opinions about what Denver is, what Denver isn't, what life is like here. So that kind of naturally led itself to be an artist series. I mean, there's so much great art coming out of this city anyways, and especially we're in the Rhino Arts District, and this new building where we do our canning is right in the Rhino Arts District, so it's the perfect tie-in to say, okay, well, like, what better way could we sort of represent this area that we're in than to just have local artists do it? You know, instead of trying to tell people what Denver is to us, we can kind of reinvent that every single year, which has been a really fun project. So the first year was Josh Holland, and he knocked it out of the park. It was just really, really different art last year than anything you see on our cans, which was fun because we definitely have this very icon-focused brand, and so Josh is an awesome illustrator and was able to sort of, you know, if you would look at the can, I mean, the style is just completely different than anything we have. We've got, that one has Lucifer on it, except it's got fire, like flames coming out of his eyes.
Flames make everything better.
Yeah. And then this second iteration that just came out is John Vogel of the Bungaloo. And so he actually is a really awesome, another really great local artist who's definitely gotten some exposure through a lot of his design work on posters for bands. He's done some really, really cool stuff. We found out about him that way. And also he came recommended by Josh. So it was sort of natural. John was at the first artist series launch of this whole new plan last year. So we met him there, and he kind of followed up. He lives down the street. He was already a great fan of Great Divide, and so it was just a natural relationship that built afterwards. His art speaks for itself, and this second can, we were a little worried how it would top the first one, but it...
Yeah, John's style is very unique, and, you know, he's done some work for a number of different brands nationally, and I know that he's worked for, like, Target, I think maybe some apparel stores as well, but and I also know that he recently has done some work for Bayer Brewing here in town. And also,
yeah.
What people don't realize is he actually did the new design for Dogfish Head's labels, and those don't really so much speak to his style in particular because he was kind of having to follow a very specific guideline in that sense. But it was cool that you all were able to allow him to just utilize his free range and kind of bring his true, you know, style to the cans and labels. It really shines through.
Yeah, you're definitely a little more limited on a can and just the, you know, printing capabilities. But that's why it's cool as well, because beyond the can, there are a bunch of different iterations of the art. So he did some custom screen prints as well that were numbered and all signed. You know, we've got these cool license plate tackers, different one-off t-shirts, so different ways that he can showcase his artistic talent outside of just the one beer product. So
absolutely.
It's been really fun.
Now, on a similar kind of note, from a local standpoint, you all have recently introduced a local knowledge series. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so those are happening about once a month. We just released the third one, which is a raspberry sour, and so those are in bottles. They're tap room and barrel bar only. Basically, the impetus behind that was that we have a lot of fun stuff coming through our pilot system all the time, but because we are a packaging brewery, a lot of times people you know, they know some of our bigger brands, but don't necessarily get the chance to try everything that we have coming.
Or they don't think to go to the tap room.
Or they don't
think... buy your beer everywhere.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we definitely... So we're 23 years old. We were packaging before we even had a tap room at the original brewery. So it's kind of the opposite model that people have now. So it's bringing more of a focus back to the fact that, you know, we're still a Denver brand. And if you don't necessarily want to sit in the tap room for all of your beers, then here's another way that you can try different things from Great Divide than our core packaged products. But you can just pick it up and take it with you.
Takes you back to your roots and allows you to kind of try out some fun stuff. And
yeah.
Be a little experimental with it. Plus, there are some fun factoids involved as well, right?
Yeah. So the name, a lot of people come into both of our bars, and because they know that, you know, Great Divide's sort of this Denver brand, it's been around for a while, they ask our bartenders all the time what they should do in Denver and ask for recommendations. So this was a fun way to sort of tie that into a beer project. And so we got recommendations from our fans, and we're actually continually taking more. So if you use the hashtag local knowledge, we'll still please take more submissions. We constantly need more. And putting them on bookmarks. So we got them from, you know, local beer writers. Tristan submitted one. We got them from other breweries, you know, people from restaurants and cool places around town. And we just put them on a bookmark in every six pack, and we're trying to rotate enough of those that you shouldn't get the same one. So every time
cool.
you pick up a six pack, you get a cool tip from
an insider.
Best,
cool. If you were our local knowledge insider, what would be your fun factoid or tip for Denver?
Oh man.
Hunter, I'm gonna ask you the same
question.
We've already had a lot of submissions about burritos, so maybe not.
No tacos or burritos?
I mean, burritos are fantastic.
Recently,
but
I told someone, I was like, don't tell all your friends. I'm trying to remember what that was.
We've actually had a few people who are like, why are you telling people these things? I'm like, all right, well, okay.
Denver's not secret.
You know,
anymore.
There'll be another.
Oh, yeah.
Over.
Oh,
we'll find out eventually.
I thought people would actually get really pissed at me about.
Tell us all.
The Red Rocks regulars. I was talking to you about it, the secret bathroom in Red Rocks.
Oh, I know the secret bathroom.
I don't. You didn't last time though. It's the one. There's a whole other level below that bathroom.
Oh, I know about that.
You gotta go down. You gotta keep going. So if you're looking at stage left, and so if you're looking at the stage right side, for those that I just learned music this past couple of years. So
sure.
Stages for me.
Hunter just
right
learned
now.
About the
I just learned that stage left and stage
aww.
Right. Yeah. So, going back to stage left, there's a bathroom. God damn it, people. How many viewers, listeners did we get?
Two.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Two lucky folks get to go pee with no line at Red Rocks
yeah.
on the next show. So if you're looking at, or just yes, for your stage left, there's a bathroom on like the first level. There is very little signage, but there's a bathroom directly below that one. So keep that in mind. Next time, don't go to the first level. Pause. Look for like this little teeny stairwell.
Right.
Hunter's local knowledge is just going to say stage left like 10 times.
Yeah.
It is a lifesaver.
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Stage
yeah.
left, as in if you're looking at the stage,
yeah.
stage left.
No,
it's
stage
then
right.
If
anyone knows about
yeah.
any other good bathrooms around town.
Some of these are called. Actually.
Well,
yeah.
Colorado.
Yeah.
Actually.
It's
a
music hall. There are giant bathrooms,
oh,
but everyone uses the one.
Everyone ends up right up against
yeah.
the bar. It cracks me up.
And
yes.
then you go back to the stage right
bathroom. Stage right bathroom, 20 toilets. No,
all
line.
Of the toilets.
yeah,
it's
yeah.
fantastic.
And then at High Dive, all the toilets are terrible.
Well,
yeah,
it's the high
dive. And a scene
the doors
from
don't
hell.
Even work.
That adds to the experience at High Dive.
And that's why I go there.
No doors in the stalls, so
yeah.
Know.
There is a
two.
Secret bathroom
everyone
that is also just as shitty
as
the door.
You gotta be really not shy if you're going to the bathroom. Deuce style.
Hey, bro.
yeah.
It's a coincidence that you all bring up the bathroom discussion.
Is that the next topic?
Our missing co-host, Jesse Brookstein, has put together a
he's still in the bathroom.
Power bathroom list for Denver. So
whoa.
We'll see how those stack up. They're called the Power, the best bathrooms. It's a Power Rankings of the bathrooms
oh.
in Denver. And then he's also working on a Power Bottoms puns about the worst bathrooms in Denver.
Is he really? That's awesome.
He also has a pizza list.
Yes, and that will be on Porch Drinking at some point.
Yeah,
good.
Oh, the pizza list. We could use the pizza list.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Bess, what's your tip? What's your neat tip? Fun factoid.
I don't know if it's like a neat tip or a fun factoid, but like growing up here, I have always had like a raging lady boner for Colfax. And kids in the suburbs are usually very afraid of Colfax.
That's
you're
true.
Like, how have you not been murdered? Well, don't be a dick to people. I'll try that.
I had a mushroom stroll on Colfax one time.
Right?
Oh.
It's
she
delightful.
It was actually kind of scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every group of people I walked past, I was like, okay, don't touch me.
But like, there's a little area on East Colfax called like the Bluebird Music District.
Yeah.
And we have a few really awesome venues and some kick-ass bars. And probably my favorite, and I didn't tell you because I love you.
Thank you.
Secrets.
I won't tell anyone except everyone.
Except everyone listening. Thanks. There's a really awesome, like, divey punk bar called Southside Kitchen and Bar that has a phenomenal draft beer list. They do taco specials 3 nights a week, and you guys know how I feel about tacos. And then on weekends, they have upstairs, if you go through the little red door, it's kind of like a speakeasy tiki bar.
Oh, really?
Fucking fantastic.
Southside Kitchen?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And then Hidden Idol is the tiki bar. It's only open 3 nights a week.
Is that east or west of Colorado?
West.
Hidden
west.
Idol?
Oh,
great.
Yeah.
It's across the street from Rock Bar.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking
rock
of Rock
Bar.
I once had a friend who got drunk down by the bar. There used to be a beer bar next to the Capitol. Do you remember that?
Uptown Brothers.
Yeah, Uptown Brothers.
It was supposed to be a brewery, and they failed as a bar before they could even brew anything. They had equipment there and stuff. I remember going there, and they had, like, 2-for-1 happy hours, and they had the Abyss from Deschutes on tap.
Oh, God.
So I'm like, oh, fucking hell, yeah, I want that.
Keep them rolling.
They served it to me in a pint, and I had both at once.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, that was a good night.
So yeah, my friend, in a similar vein, probably also drinking 2-for-1 Abyssus from the show, drank that and decided that her parents were meeting her at Rock Bar for her birthday. I don't know why she thought this,
Whoa.
But she proceeded to run from the Capitol straight up Colfax to Rock Bar, trying in an attempt to meet her parents.
Was
there.
It her birthday?
I hope
it was
her
birthday.
It was boarded up by then.
No.
So Rock Bar, they're like, we're here, but it doesn't look like it's open.
No,
this is decondemned.
This was back when Rock Bar was still.
Can't things you can't do. Are we supposed to find our
neighborhood? No, I don't need to have like a password.
Yeah.
This is one of them speakeasies.
Oh,
crawl in. Crawl through the metal boarding. Yes. speaking of places with fantastic taps availability,
segues.
And this place does still exist, is not boarded up. It's actually very successful. It's our good friends at First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located at 1309 26th Street. They are a pour your own draft system. You can go in there and try up to 40 different taps. It's kind of like visiting a beer festival, but in a taproom setting. So go in, try as much or as little as you want from each draft line, and you can sample a little of everything. So First Draft Taproom Kitchen, located in the heart of the Rhino Art District, just a little bit south of here, right? Yeah, just 26th and Larimer. So. Yeah, it's over there. It's right over there. We're pointing in that direction.
Yeah.
First draft happened.
On the other side of the tracks.
Yeah.
That was a good five-finger point.
Now, Shane, you guys are drinking some roadies, and I just want to show some love because I think that's one of the best beers of the summer so far.
Yeah, I agree. And nice. I love fruit beers with, like, oh, gosh. Well, we've already talked about number twos in some bathrooms. But I love, like,
I want to see
how
this
connects.
I love
fruit beers.
They're very effervescent.
I love fruit
burps.
Beers. Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Like, I love fruit beers when I burp. And it tastes like that fruit.
Yeah.
I love that. And that's totally what that beer does.
Yeah. I get it, man.
It's a good beer.
Hunter loves a good burp.
A good beer burp.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll let it rip. I'm not offended by them. Man, you smell that? It's grapefruit, motherfucker. That's not Mexican food from last night. That's a fresh grapefruit rattler.
That ain't El Camino you're smelling. It's Grape Divide.
It's
Rhodey. That should be your next commercial.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't think of that before. That's obviously a great ad.
I'm serious. Whenever I have a good fruit beer, I burp it up. I'm like, oh, cool.
Man, maybe during the next Porchcast, we'll have like a recording of like someone burping and be like, hey, that's not...
Well, I mean, I have just been sitting back when they've been coming up, so I could just lean forward, and that could happen this
really
time.
Really just
lay down. If you want.
Yeah.
Or no.
We're going for authenticity.
Maybe later. Okay.
It'll just come back at you with that pop filter.
Yeah. You guys can smell this, right? Like,
back to
Rhodey,
though. Back to Rhodey. Tell us a little bit about the creation of this beer. Very refreshing, and like Hunter pointed out, great fruit notes, but in his own special Hunter way.
It was great. Yeah, because I'm a salesperson. By the way, yes.
But
just for this one beer.
I think when people talk about Rattlers, they always are a little bit apprehensive because there's the idea that it could be a little artificial tasting, but I don't get that at all here. I get a really well-balanced, nuanced kind of beer. And so tell us what went into this.
Yeah, so this was one of those ones that we were pretty divided on. We were greatly divided on this beer.
Like a dad joke button.
Dad joke for
a while.
Oh my god, that was amazing.
Obama's dad joke plugs.
This came out maybe last spring, I think. And it was actually one of our out-of-state guys who was really advocating for it, just kind of saw an opportunity there. And also, a lot of our out-of-state reps, too, have been the ones who have been requesting for the longest time that we have some lighter beers. And Great Divide's been like, but, wait, like, less than 9%? Oh, man! So it's kind of been a long time coming. We needed it in our lineup anyways. We've had different lighter offerings that we ended up taking out, but we didn't immediately have replacements for them. So we didn't really even have anything below 6 for a little while. So this was one of the suggestions to have a Rattler. And, some people were really excited about the idea, some people not so much, and I'll fully admit that I was one of the ones who was like, is that what we need to do? But then once we started going through rounds of sensory and trying out different recipes, we they worked so hard on this beer. They did so many different rounds of trying to do it, authentically. Do we bring in soda? Do we use a local soda company? Do we make our own soda? How are we using grapefruit? Is it real grapefruit? And finally, what I think people are tasting and really loving is the fact that we ended up finding a way to get that same really refreshing flavor that you get from a traditional Rattler, but without the use of soda, and it's just a base beer formulated to work perfectly with the amount of grapefruit puree and grapefruit essence that we have in there. So when people open it, you're like, oh my god, I can smell the grapefruit from across the room. That's because there's a shit ton of real grapefruit in there. And we got as low as 4.2%. So some Rattlers and Shandies can be like 2,
Yeah.
So we're like 4.2. Okay, we did it.
Below five.
It's still enough to party.
Yeah. And honestly, I've been drinking so much of this summer. Like, I didn't think I was going to love it the way I did, but it's just, it is. It's like, it's light, it's refreshing, it's good. You get those great grapefruit burps, that really stick with you.
Those aftershocks are great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Bess, I want to bring you in here. Bess Doherty of the Grateful Gnome. You all just had a very traumatic incident happen, and, we joke around a lot, but that was some serious shit that went down. Tell all of our listeners who may not be as familiar with the situation. What exactly happened with you guys?
So, it was a Monday afternoon, and we were sitting in the brewery. It was myself and my plumber. Dan was outside sanding. His brother was on the front porch staining some pieces for the bar. And next door to where our building that was built in 1922 is going in, there's a brand new apartment building. And their five-story scaffolding collapsed on top of our building and punctured the ceiling in a few places. Two of the planks came close to hitting myself and Kenny, Dan's brother. It was very unpleasant. The whole building just started shaking. Pieces of ceiling started crumbling around us. I'm happy, like, I clicked back to reality and heard my plumber yelling at me to run. And I just covered my head and ran outside.
Cow.
Yeah.
Now, how close were you guys to being open at that point? You guys were...
2 to 3 weeks.
2 to 3 weeks, yeah. So the Grateful Gnome is a it was brewery in
imagine.
Brewery in development, and you know, right on the dawn of their opening, this incident occurred. Now, as I understand, you all are because of this setback, kind of in an undetermined amount of time. What can people expect from you guys? Like, as far as a timeline or at least next steps, how can people help out?
So,
first of all, we are very, very, very thankful that you're safe and well. So
me too. So at this point, timeline, we have no answers. We are still not allowed in the building while the various insurance companies, City of Denver and OSHA, finish their investigations. No one can tell us when those are going to be done. Once those are done, we will repair all the damage to the building, get a new roof, new HVAC system, and then continue like we were. So as soon as we have updates, we're going to post it on all our social media and stuff. But at this point, neither Dan nor myself have any idea of a time frame.
Now, as I understand, there's a kind of Kickstarter or crowdfunding that's going into place to kind of help support you guys. What can people do to help chip in?
So that took both Dan and myself by surprise when this GoFundMe started. There's a shop on Tennyson Street called Alchemy, and they do like facials and spa kind of stuff. And they took it upon themselves after talking to Dan and making sure he'd be okay, because both Dan and I are kind of prideful people and hate asking for help or even admitting that we might need help.
Sure.
So we weren't going to do this. But Bree over at Alchemy reached out to Dan and made sure he'd be okay and started a GoFundMe for our brewery just to, like, we needed to get open to be able to keep paying our rent and stuff. We've had really bad luck trying to open this brewery. Our first general contractor bled us of most of our money. We got some more investors on board. Things were on track until this happened. And now we are just kind of at a loss for how to make sure we can still get open at some point. Mm-hmm. So Bree started this fund, and we're hoping to at least cover a month's rent with it. And the outpouring of support from our local Tennyson community and the craft beer community has been amazing. I have it pulled up here. It was started 4 days ago, and we're already just shy of $3,000.
That's awesome.
That's
great. Yeah. We'll be sure to post the link if any of our listeners are willing to help chip in. This is definitely a tremendous group of people that could really use some support. So a big thank you.
I just
want to
make beer again.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I can only imagine. Yeah. Yeah.
I want one of those cheesesteaks.
I was on the ground floor with Ratio, and I got to witness the passion that, you know, that Jason and Scott put into Ratio. And I just could only imagine. Yeah, I mean, you know, Scott, someone might have died. somebody would have been hurt. He would have been so furious. I can only imagine trying to control your emotion and just keep going forward. So I'm behind you guys, for sure.
Thank you.
Yep, I'm excited for you guys.
Well, We brought you guys together because...
Because we're the dream team?
Because you are the dream team.
By all the giggling earlier.
Amid all the unicorn and the sparkles.
We haven't even gotten to that yet.
Oh my god.
You all spent some time together working at Wincoop. And
yeah.
I wanted to reunite.
Reunited in a face. Good.
Exactly. Tell us about what it was like to work together at Wincoop, one of Denver's oldest breweries that is steeped in tradition, including the tradition of the Shannon Burner and Best Doherty team.
Yes. It's.
I mean, I always refer to it as a delightful chit show.
that's accurate.
I mean, tied into all of this, Jason also spent some time brewing at Wincoop as well. So
yeah.
it all comes full circle.
Wincoop family are like cockroaches; they're just everywhere.
That's true. I've met a lot of people from Wincoop.
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember this. I always forget his name, but he's a brewer out in Dallas. Craig. Yeah, Craig always comes in business ratio, and he's in Colorado. Yeah.
He was with
Sandy Brown. No, he works for, what is it again?
Rawr and Sons.
Yeah, great brewery. Rawr. Yeah, yeah, medal winning brewery. In Dallas. Rawr. Yeah, he was there. Obviously, Charlie from Denver Beer Co.
Yes, we have Brad at Prost.
Brad at Prost.
Matt Goldspot, Josh at Wonderland.
Matt, I always forget about Matt, too. Yeah.
Thomas,
who's
apparently moving to Norway to brew, used to be at Ska.
Oh, crazy. I had no idea
that
Thomas worked at Wincoop, too. Yeah,
yep.
I just saw Thomas not too long ago.
I don't know if you guys have heard of the
in
governor.
In the bathroom line.
Who's that guy?
Yo, Hick.
He also was there.
No, I actually recently, speaking of Hick, I recently spoke on this panel called Fuck Up Nights, and Patty Calhoun, the editor of The Westward, and editor and co-founder of The Westward, rather, she actually spoke at that evening, at that event. And she actually brought up a very interesting story about Hick, saying that back in the day, the Westward building was right across the street from Wincoop. And so very early on, Governor Hickenlooper, who at the time was just, you know, one of the co-founders of Wincoop, invited over...
Plebeian like the rest of us.
Yeah, just a beer industry nerd. Invited the Westward over to cover the fact that they were hosting the then mayor of Denver. And so Westward went and covered the event, and the next day after the article had published in the paper, Governor Hickenlooper, or John Hickenlooper, ran into the office and was screaming furiously because they had made a typo. So what had happened was that Hickenlooper had bought the mayor a set of bongo drums, but in the Westward, they published that they had that Hickenlooper had bought the mayor a set of bongs.
So, I was hoping.
The future was foretold.
Yeah.
So
he thought he was.
Very big fuck up.
So,
not as big of a mess.
Right, yeah.
So he thought that the Westward was out to sabotage the Wincoop brewery.
And now the Westward is full of marijuana ads.
Yeah.
Oh, the circle.
You're not
a
dispensary unless you're in the Westward.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Want to real quickly plug one of our sponsors before we get into more. A big thank you to Latitude Financial Group. If you are stowing away bottles of bourbon barrel aged stouts and wild lambics and sours, it's equally important to stow away some money for a rainy day. Be sure to help pay off debt and help lower your taxes by visiting latitudefinancialgroup.com to learn about all the financial planning you might need to help you save for your future. Once again, that's latitudefinancialgroup.com. Schedule a complimentary meeting now. Cool. So I want to dive.
Now.
What?
Now, after this.
Yeah, after, yes,
yeah.
After the podcast. There's just a few minutes left, so let's just hang out for a second and giggle with us for a little bit. Now, a lot has happened. I definitely want to touch on the Brewers Association. Earlier today, announced kind of this new initiative where independent breweries can apply and receive a free seal that denotes or kind of distinguishes their establishment as an independently owned craft brewery. What do you guys feel about this? I guess, what is the impact of Hunter? What do you feel? When you read the article, do you feel like this is something that will be of impact to consumers?
I do. I think it's a great step in the right direction, especially as more acquisitions are happening. I already saw a big large social media debate today on it, thinking it's still like it's not enough, which I agree it's not, because the buyer still is not, they're going to look past it, they're not going to care. I think that if this is a way of going at InBev, it's, you're still throwing rocks at like a giant castle.
Tell us more about this castle.
I think it's definitely a step in the right direction, and I'm curious. I mean, my background is not marketing. I am not in that world. But I do think it is important to establish something, a common symbol for independent breweries to associate themselves with. In Belgium a long time ago, I went to a talk, and they were talking about a way to distinguish sours on tap handles and bottles between like kettles and wood sours, which I thought was great. They ended up not doing that because their research showed that people weren't going to care. And I still think that is going to possibly happen. I do think it's interesting that I'm not going to say any names, because I'll let them speak for themselves, but it was a good point. Not everyone's going to want this symbol on their bottles or their cans.
Yeah.
They have their artwork. They have their branding. They're not going to want to like shove this on their products. So I don't think every independent brewery is going to do it.
Does this name rhyme with Schmitschmanns?
Yes.
Yes. I just want to make his own points.
Subtle.
but I agree. I was like, yeah, you're totally right. It doesn't fit within your branding. You're probably not going to do it.
But I think you know, the important point, and I definitely want to ask both Shannon and Bess, because you all have had even more of an extensive background in this industry, and you all have seen this industry evolve over time. But I think that, you know, I think the Brewers Association created this as, you know, something that that breweries can use at their own discretion, and they can use in whatever ways that they feel is appropriate. Based on branding and also based on education and what they feel like their own local consumer base might find helpful or useful. I don't think that this is really something that, you know, I don't think that the Brewers Association is pushing this on anybody, but it is a good resource, and I think a lot of people have asked for it. From your all's background, do you feel like this is something that is important or necessary or even relevant?
Yes.
Yeah?
I do.
Why?
I think the general consumer, like, we live in a happy little bubble with a bunch of beer nerds who care and know about this.
Okay.
General consumer people just getting into craft beer, they don't know. And they, like, unless they want to sit and read a bunch of blog posts and stuff.
Which we hope they do. Yeah.
We know. Yeah.
Shameless plug, portdrinking.com.
Yeah. I'm not convinced most Americans want to read.
They don't.
No. So, like, having an image, you said it, not me. I think it is. Reading's hard.
Listen, watch. I love that portion has the estimated reading time. 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll read that.
We've just programmed it to say, like, 30 seconds for every article. Even if it's like
at least 5 minutes.
I need to read more.
That took me 2 days to read. Back to my Clifford books.
Oh my god, I love Clifford.
Podcasts and movies.
No, I think this is a good first step.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when they announced that beers with certain names would still be given an award in just the style mentioned, not the actual name. It's a first step.
Sure.
We still have a lot of work to do. And on this side, we need better consumer education and outreach.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
it's got to start somewhere, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That gets the conversation going.
Mm-hmm.
Which is exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, I feel like having like posters and coasters may be better, because like you said, so many breweries invest so much into their image and their artwork.
Right.
And honestly, the image they came up with is meh.
Yeah.
Pretty big too.
Yeah.
You know? I almost feel like it'd be easier if you had some sort of, like, just gold seal or something that people got used to seeing, and then, like, you just knew that this, like, small emblem that, like, sticks out and could kind of fit in a bunch of different places, that was the unifying thing. Yeah. But, like, a large logo with a bunch of typography.
With a drain port
model.
Yeah. And, like, no offense to the designer who made that. I'm sure that they went through a lot of iterations and
right.
stuff.
You
but,
certainly
yeah.
know about designs.
It's just
yeah,
it's easy to critique those things on the outside.
Or
yeah.
tap handles. It's,
No, I think I agree that it's a first step, because, like, even traveling outside of Colorado, I mean, it's hard enough to keep up with all the new breweries in Colorado, but I at least know the ones that are no longer independently owned here, or at least I think I do. Who knows what's happening while we're sitting here. But, you know, even just going to Portland, or I was in Seattle the other week, and the amount of times that I walked around and would see a brewery and then realize, like, oh, crap, actually, wait, hang on. And I would, like, look it up first just to make sure that I wasn't confusing it, you know, and make sure that it wasn't bought, you know, because I was trying to go around to these local breweries and just realizing how easy it is to just stumble in somewhere. And I mean, AB knows, they know what they're doing, you know, and this is intentional. And, you know, if the consumer doesn't care, then that's fine. But if the consumer does care and wants to put their money towards local and independent, then they've made it very, they've blurred the lines to the point where it is harder and harder for the consumer to be able to make that choice for themselves.
Absolutely. I'm going to take another real quick break to thank OnTap Credit Union. OnTap Credit Union specializes in crafting individual financial solutions for people who brew great beer, people who drink it, and communities where they all reside and do business. So if your brewery is looking to upgrade an equipment, or maybe you're just starting out and trying to get your brewery off the ground, OnTap Credit Union provides financial solutions specifically designed for the brewing industry. They're also sponsoring Arvada on Tap, a craft beer and barbecue festival, on July 22nd from noon to 7 p.m. That's taking place out at Ralston Park at 64th and Sims. Once again, that's OnTap Credit Union, available at ontapcu.org. All right, you know, we talked about a little bit about how Great Divide has kind of reinvented itself a little bit in some of these initiatives, like the artist series and the local knowledge series. And I feel like New Belgium is kind of at that point right now. Yesterday, they just announced that they were launching this Wood and Cellar Reserve series, which is specializing in kind of very, very rare small batch releases. 3 to 4 of those releases will happen just within the tap rooms at their Fort Collins and Asheville locations. And then you'll also see about 10 to 12 other brands that will be released throughout the year in select markets across the U.S. You know, over the past few months, we've kind of casually taken a look at New Belgium's approach and how it's kind of changed over the recent year or so. You know, I think some of that can be attributed to new leadership. You know, we saw Christine Parrish leave the CEO position shortly after she joined the team, but also you have a lot more of a corporate influence coming from Diageo, influencing their kind of leadership team. This one, I feel, is more of a return to what New Belgium kind of initially started as. And Hunter, you're laughing. I want to hear.
I laugh because, like, most breweries that are that successful know exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
If you pay attention to craft beer, there's a lot of breweries, just small size, who have actually climbed into the beer market with small, limited, extremely local bottle releases, and they have been gaining ground.
Are you saying this is a little too little, too late?
Absolutely. No, I don't think it's a little too late. I just know they're going back in that market.
Yeah,
and I think it's great. I've already texted one of my dating up there at New Belgium, and he's pulled me aside. I've got Loveless on hold for him, one of our barrel releases, and we're trading. So I usually trade bottles with our bottles with Call Arms. Jesse's not here, by the way. I think he's about 5:30 Yeah, we're done with our training. I trade with New Belgium. I'm going back to my roots.
Thanks for the no-show. It helped.
I think that they are going back into that market. They've seen that market grow, and that small release market, similar to what you guys do with your tap room, like a pilot series release. Mm-hmm. It's get people into the tap room and kind of see that, yeah, you know, we still can put out these, you know, super limited releases. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing by any means. I just know that's what they're.
Bess, I'd like to hear your take too.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Chan, I didn't mean to cut you off.
But. Oh, well, just to that point, like I can agree in that it's not the most economical thing to do. It doesn't make sense when you have distributors or lots of sales reps who want certain styles to spend so much time and energy on the small things. So at first you're like, cool, more people want this beer. And so you make more of it, and you make more of it. And then next thing you know, you have, you know, these bigger production beers, and they take more of a priority. So I guess I can only assume what they were thinking, kind of similar to us. It's just just a forced pause and focus back
on,
like...
You all are doing a similar kind of approach towards the Yeti series, right? Sorry, the barrel-aged Yeti series.
The...
Sorry. In terms of dialing back on these large releases of your seasonal Yetis, right?
Of our whole barrel aged series.
Oh, your barrel aged
series. But that's also because we have this new facility with a specific sour barrel aging room and a barrel aging room, not for
clean,
sours.
Clean barrels.
And a clean. And so we just realized we've had the same few releases, and while they're successful, it doesn't allow us a lot of room for new stuff. So that one is a little different than Local Knowledge. That one's more about, like, we want to, and we just have to stop with the others if we're going to.
Yeah, just to kind of make more room.
And
also
Avery's
like,
done it, Firestone Walker did it this year.
You just don't have enough room for that
make
many barrels, for that
many
bottles either in your portfolio, so you kind of just have to say goodbye to some things sometimes.
Yeah.
But Bess, you know, coming from the kind of the, you know, you were the barrel wrangler over at Wincooper.
Barrel troll,
excuse me. sorry, I didn't know we were in a formal setting here.
Barrel wrangler's pissed
right now. Barrel troll to you, sir.
Right?
There is a barrel wrangler and I'm not in hand.
Seriously, Tristan, serious, sorry.
Does this...
He's crazy.
He carries a rope around him everywhere he goes.
Oh, yeah.
Does this sound like something that's exciting to you, or something that kind of, I guess, a departure from this widely available Lips of Faith series, kind of focusing back a little bit more locally?
So, I have very mixed emotions on this. The departure from Lips of Faith is painful from, like, my own personal journey through craft beer.
Sure.
I remember my first time going up to Belgium years ago, and they had this peach sour beer on tap that none of us had a sour beer, because I'm fucking old, and this was a long time ago. It was Eric's Ale. And then they started bottling the shit, and that day we had La Folie, too. And for 2 years after that, I sought out every single sour beer I could get my hands on.
Sure.
Since then, Lips of Faith has grown, and they've done some weird shit that hasn't always hit the mark, in my opinion. But they had those fallbacks of La Folie and Eric's Ale.
Yeah.
And
Transatlantic Creek as well.
Oh, my God. That beer's fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
And especially being a sentimental brewer, as I am, to see especially those three names go away is one of the most heartbreaking things I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were revolutionary in the sour scene in craft beer in America.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
To any of those beers.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, I saw aged in Leopold Blackberry whiskey barrels, and I'm like, fuck hell yeah.
I want that. Yeah.
And I hope at some point they can find a balance and maybe bring back, like, their three original flagship sours.
And from what I understand, I don't think those are necessarily gone per se. They probably will see a different format, maybe. But from what I understand, you know, La Folie, Le Terroir, and Transatlantic Creek will definitely be back in some form or another. I would love to see Eric Sale. I completely agree. That's a tremendous, tremendous beer. I was probably maybe on the opposite side of, well, I think there were definitely some misses in that series.
Yeah.
But I also love some of the weird, funky shit that came out of it, like the coconut curry Hefeweizen, which I thought was really bizarre, but also really unique and interesting.
Like, I love the Coco Mole.
Yeah, Coco Mole was fantastic. There were some, maybe like the Cascara Quad, which was a little bit odd for me, but a little bit of a reach, more away from, you know, some of the funky, weird, cool shit that I love. But yeah, no, I think this definitely leaves room. And, you know, I think the other point that I made in our article on Porch Drinking was that I wouldn't necessarily bid adieu to weird, bizarre, awesome, cool, clean beers that are coming from New Belgium, because as my beer buzz kind of leaked last week, the Imperial Frambozen with cocoa looks phenomenal. Yeah, I know. One of my favorites from the Sizzle standpoint as well. I think Jess is having, or Bess is having a moment here. Let her cool down real quick.
We'll come back to that.
Give her some of the Speaking of bizarre stuff, have you heard the story? I want to bring up a really random, weird story of an 80-year-old man who apparently hid a bunch of treasure in the Rocky Mountains in New Mexico. Have you guys heard of this story?
Yeah,
I read the headline.
I read the whole thing today.
This 80-year-old man apparently stashed away a pirate's chest full of gold coins and gems. And
it's like
has,
American like eagles, like double eagle gold coins, gold nuggets.
And they're stashed away, and he's kind of dropped clues. He's 86 years old. He's a former Vietnam fighter pilot. And he has hidden these away and dropped clues and kind of invited the general public out to search for them. Sounds
general
really cool.
General public, too. Yeah, it's like, what was it, like 300,000 people just look for this treasure?
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's the Nick
it's
Cage
yeah.
National Treasure
oh my God.
Of news stories.
I might have exaggerated it, but I know it's in the hundreds of thousands.
And yet, the problem now is that two people have actually died trying to search for this treasure.
Right, two out of 300,000.
So my
those
question,
are pretty good odds.
My question to you is,
Nick Cage, come back,
and he does claim, and I'm not trying to make fun of their people's deaths, but that they're in safe places. So his defense, because the Santa Fe police have asked him to pick up his treasure and like not have this happen anymore, and he keeps claiming it's like in a safe place. Like, I don't know why people are looking in dangerous places. So.
So is he at fault here, this old 86-year-old man, for leading people on a wild treasure chase?
No. People need to have more personal responsibility.
That's
what I was going to say. He's like, these are adult. I don't. These weren't like 2 9-year-olds that ran away from home to look for like Pete's treasure. Yeah.
The treasure
in the black cage.
Speaking of personal responsibility, great topic.
The treasure is estimated to be worth between $1 to $2 million.
Yeah.
Would you go search for the treasure?
I got beer to sell.
Yeah.
Got a brewery top and shows too.
Yeah.
I'm good.
I'd rather not quit my job and be homeless for forever.
Oh, wow. Took a drastic turn for the worse.
I don't know. 1 versus 300,000 people that are also looking for it. And I'm not. I like to think I'm bright. I know I'm not. But I'm not winning. Like, I don't win shit.
Yeah.
I fucking just like, what's that? What's the name of that game?
Computer
I'm totally
games?
Spacing. No, bingo. I used to play bingo.
What the fuck?
Four Collins. I used to play bingo every Monday. Sometimes four games at a time. I never won. I played literally hundreds of bingo. Bingo squares.
That's
for
not
like
a
2 years.
That's not a skill game.
It's not a skill game. It's not like I don't win anything.
Yeah.
Whenever I think of like gambling, it's like I don't gamble because I played hundreds of games of bingo for dollar beer night. Didn't win shit.
Yeah.
I'm not going against 300,000 people for $1 million.
Right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Santa Fe, it's like a 7-hour drive. Yeah. You know,
bingo has led
like
Hunter to a life of. Logic
no risk
taking.
I don't win shit.
Reclusion.
I'm not going to run off and look for $1 million against with a lot of other people that want to be homeless.
Well, guys,
with their
jobs. Aside from this bingo, this riveting bingo talk, one more plug real quick. Earlier we talked about branding needs, and Made by Chalk, our good friends, also located in Rhino. Chalk specializes in creating brand experiences for the craft brewing industry. From product packaging to websites, apps, and events, Chalk's services are tailored for independently owned craft breweries, those that have their new little insignia from the Brewers Association. Maltsters and industry-related consumer products. If you're looking for premium branding for your brewery or a new concept for your web design needs, visit madebychalk.com. Well, folks, I want to say a big thank you to Shannon and Bess for joining us on the show today. Also to Hunter and Sam.
We kind of kept it together a little bit.
We did so well. We're
like a little cricket noise in there. We're Brookstein at. That's going to be the hashtag.
MVP of this podcast.
For this podcast,
Jesse
this episode is where Brookstein at.
I want to remind all of our listeners to follow us on iTunes and also any of your listening devices. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast. And if you thought it was interesting and it maybe made you giggle as much as we did on the show, then be sure to give us a like. Give us a positive rating. So. Thank you to everyone for listening. This has been episode 38 of the Porchcast. We're gonna get played out to some. What kind of talk is that? Like just like old people like chattering.
We are old souls.
Like,
I guess
sounds like squirrels.
Go to me old.
Guys, 5 stars.
This is this has turned into a podcast on cartoon voiceovers.
2 shots up.
We're gonna get shut down.
And we just lost it in the last segment, in the very last part of last segment. Everything
exploded.
No, we
didn't.
Wait, are we not recording anymore?
No, we
didn't. I'm not stopping.
We'll let Bud Bronson, the good timers, take us out. Thanks so much for listening. This has been episode 38 of the Porchcast.